This week on the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we are at the New York State Association of ASC's meeting in Albany, New York, and discuss the activities of the New York State Association, as well as the various presentations during the meeting, including a discussion about EMR implementation and how to avoid legal issues with electronic medical records. We also update our listeners on the status of OAS CAPS and discuss the challenges in opening an ambulatory surgery center in New York State and its unique licensing requirements.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading full-service ASC regulatory compliance consulting firms, and the Regulatory Compliance series of books for ASCs by John Gailey and published by Eden Group Development. Welcome to episode 21 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for May 21st, 2018, recording from the Desmond in Albany, New York, the site of the Spring 2018 New York State Association Conference with additional segments from Lake Tahoe. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. I'm here with Judy D'Ambrosia, Director of Educational Services with AHS, and Alex Borneman, Director of Operations at AHS, and John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and Eden Group Development, and one of the nation's leading ASC industry experts in regulatory compliance, finance, and administration. John is the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry and a frequent national speaker on all aspects of ambulatory surgery center management. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Sue.
How are we all doing?
Hi, guys.
So if our audience hears in the background some noise, we are indeed, we're recording live from the conference here. And what you hear in the background is all of the people, excited people coming for this this conference this year at this beautiful Desmond. What do you think of the hotel?
This is the pretty, I've never been here. This is the prettiest place. Really sweet venue.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It really is pretty, and I'd never been here. You had been here years ago, you had said.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, this is where we used to have the New York State Association meeting back in the 90s, periodically. And, you know, something that hasn't changed since then. The rooms look the same, too. It's it's just gorgeous. And what they're actually describing, which you don't have to describe for everybody, is that... You feel like you're outside in a colonial village here.
Yeah, it's like a little courtyard area, but it's inside. It's really
pretty. When I checked in, they asked me if I wanted a room looking inside or outside, and I was like, well, obviously outside. Why would I want to look inside?
And now you know.
And they've given us our own little room here, which is looking right out on the courtyard. So you know, it's cute. It's very nice of them. So anybody that's been a long-term listener to us knows that we are missing one of our people this week. Jenna is, she actually made it to Lake Tahoe, I found out last night. Unfortunately, her in-laws did not. They have, they're coming from Paraguay, and they were stuck in customs for 24 hours. They have a 24-hour delay.
Oh, my.
And they're all going to her husband's graduation from PhD at in Reno, Nevada. So Sue and I are hopping on a plane as soon as this conference is over tomorrow, and we're heading out to see the graduation. Hopefully everything will work well for us. But and then, you know, somebody's going to have to hold down the shop. Who's going to be that?
Alex and I are not jetting anywhere except home.
That's right. With all of this equipment, we brought all of our podcast equipment down here, which is pretty impressive here. We're going to take a picture so we can post this on the website.
We do look pretty impressive now. I'm pretty proud of us.
So this has been an interesting week. It isn't too far into the week when we're actually doing the recording. So this is Wednesday. Usually we record around Friday or Saturday. So we don't have a lot of exciting stories to talk about. For myself, I had to do two mock surveys this week in Syracuse and New York City. That went very well. Both of our clients are going to be well prepared. So I don't have any exciting stories out of those. But Alex, you had some great exciting news out of Pennsylvania, one of our clients in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, one of our clients, they've been waiting for close to a year now for adding their new procedures just in the same specialty, and which to me is incredible. I've learned that the review process for the state takes close to 3 months.
And Alex, there are cases in the same specialty, pain management. It's not even a different specialty at all.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and that was one of the issues is we had to convince the state that they were in the same specialty.
And that there were no additional equipment required. I mean, Pennsylvania is very strict about adding new procedures. So
is this indicative of all states, or is this, you know, a joy of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I mean, so our news out to our Pennsylvania listeners is call us. We've been through this before. It can be done, but it does take a while. I just want to talk a little bit about the State Association meeting. For those of you that do not know, I was actually the founder of the State Association meeting back in 1991. Jerry Mazzola and I, Jerry has since passed on, unfortunately. We founded the New York State Association in 1991. And my story about this is fascinating. So I was, in 1990, I was working in my first surgery center, one of the first 20 in New York State. I'm sitting in my office in Rochester, New York, saying, I don't know what the heck I'm doing here. I don't know anything about this industry. I've read everything I could about it. You know, this is before the internet. You couldn't Google ambulatory surgery. And but I knew the names of the other surgery center administrators throughout the state that had been made available to us. And I called them up and I said, hey, do you want to get together and talk about what we're doing? Because, you know, I'm thinking they must all be much smarter than I am about this. And some of them were. But for the most part, we were inventing an industry back in those days. Mm-hmm. And so we started getting together. We got together. Our first meetings were in Syracuse, New York, at the office. We borrowed an office of an accounting firm out there. We bought, which, by the way, looked a lot like the room we're in right now. It was just a conference room. You know, and I think the first meeting, there were seven of us sitting around the table. We had no agenda. All we did is we just went around the table and said, what's your challenge and what do you think we can do about it? And by the end of that, you know, we all had ideas about what we wanted to do. And we all gave assignments, you know, for further research, and we all learned from each other. And that's the genesis of the New York State Association. And I think my story to everybody here is that even in 1991, there weren't a lot of experts out there. We were still calling upon each other to, you know, collectively learn what we needed to do. So, you know, not every state has an ASC association. And certainly there are some states that have ASC associations, which are still almost so big that you almost want to have an association of people in the same community or nearby to learn from. So the lesson that we always have from all of these conferences we go to, you know, we talked a lot about it at ESCA 2018, is that the reason we come here isn't always for the wonderful conference and the wonderful sessions, but that ability to talk to other people. And this is no exception here. But so I'm just so proud to be here. I'm looking around thinking, you know, this is, you know, 27 years ago that we founded the association. Look where we've come. You know, we have over 100 people here compared to those six people sitting around that table. So I couldn't be happier about
that. I love that story.
So what we're going to do here is we're going to be doing some recordings of various speakers. Some are going to be New York State specific. Some are going to be national. So the episode will be a little bit longer. And for the New York State listeners, you'll get a little bit about New York State. But for everybody else from the rest of the country, we also have some very important things like the, you know, information on some issues that are pertinent to everybody. So stay with us and we'll have a lot of great information coming up.
So with the New York State meeting, we are kicking off an exciting addition to our podcast. Visits to various state association meetings with interviews with state leaders and recorded content from speakers at the conference. If you're interested in having the ASC podcast with John Gailey visit your state association, please reach out to us at comments@ascpodcast.com.
So during the New York State meeting, we had an opportunity to interview the president of the association and the chair of the program committee for New York State. We're going to play these short interviews next. And then after our interview, stay tuned and we'll discuss some of the sessions during the conference that all of our listeners want to hear, as well as some exciting changes that are coming to the podcast, including the opportunity to get AEU credits. First, though, our interviews.
I'm here with John Gailey and Tom Faith, president of the New York State Association of ASCs.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here with you in Albany, beautiful Albany at the Desmond.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So for our audience, Tom and I have been friends for a lot longer than we care to admit that we've been friends.
Once we said the 70s.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. So, Tom, I was the last time we were at the Desmond, I was actually president of the state association, and I haven't been president since the 90s. So that's how long it's been since we've been back. So Tom is, of course, the current president here. There's a lot going on with the state association. Can you just tell us a little bit about where we are? In an earlier section, we gave a little bit of history of the state association, but we've come a long way in those 27 years. What's up?
Let me bring you up to date.
Great.
And I think before I do that, I'd like to put my arms around where we are and what we're doing right now. The New York State Association represents 134 licensed facilities, licensed by the New York State Department of Health.
And certified by Medicare.
And certified by Medicare, and every one of which is accredited by one of three approved accreditation associations in the nation.
Right. And just for our listeners, New York State requires all ambulatory surgery centers to be accredited. So.
They do. We are approaching, as an association, 1 million surgical procedures a year. By doing that, we have been able to contribute approximately $2 billion to the bad debt and charity pool, HICRA by formal name, that assists our safety net hospitals in the state to provide care to underserved and undocumented patients.
Right.
We have worked closely with workers' comp and subsequently No Fault to provide an effective and high-quality service to injured workers and accident victims. And by doing that, provide as much as a 53% discount over hospital services. And lastly, and I think this is really important and probably the most current thing I can talk to you about, we have taken a leadership role in addressing the opioid crisis and post-operative pain management and drug diversion in our facilities.
Right. And we do a lot of training on this right now. We keep our members up to date with what's going on with that. And for all of the, this isn't just a New York State issue, of course. And this issue of contributing to the community, of course, and being cheaper than the hospital alternative is, of course, a national issue also. I think we're probably doing a better job because there's so much information in New York statistically to be able to prove these numbers because of the state reporting requirements.
And we don't point that out because we want to take a knock at the hospitals.
Right.
We do it because we're proud of what we do, because we can do it,
right,
because our medical staff support what we do, and that's our goal as part of the triple aim.
Right.
At the end of the day, though, let me add this. We're here to give ourselves the opportunity to receive accolades from our elected officials, from ourselves, give us a pat on the back.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I want to remind all of your listeners that when we go home, we're a small business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're operating in a community that has a limited reimbursement package. It is a very defined medical staff.
Right.
Yeah, surgery centers don't do surgery. Members of the medical staff do surgery. Yeah. So when we look at the pressures that come from the outside, whether it be payers, national organizations like Optum or Kaiser, we have to be very sensitive to what we do and be very careful on how we do it and select those new opportunities and challenges that are coming down the pike.
Well said. Thank you very much, Tom. It's great to have this opportunity to talk to you, and let's hope we're actually recording this before the conference starts, so we're looking for a great time. And
ask me again tomorrow afternoon when we're all done.
Yeah, since we already just found out that the lead speaker for our 9 o'clock session is not here, so
I have to go and write down 45 additional minutes for my opening remarks.
Good luck with that. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Hi again. I'm here with John and with Jeffrey Flynn, CEO of Gramercy Healthcare Management.
How you doing?
Very good.
Thanks so much for coming. So this has been a real banner year for this conference, our spring conference here. And Jeffrey, you've even though we don't do much on titles here, I guess we would say you're chair of the committee that put this together. So can you tell us a little bit about this conference here this year?
Yeah, being from downstate and the conference traditionally in the past had been kind of remote upstate, we approached Tom in January about if we came in and assisted him with the conference. We had run a downstate conference of regional surgery centers back in November, which Tom attended, as well as you did.
Right.
And what we were hearing is that content was a real important factor from the centers.
Right.
So we wanted to put together a conference where we had three tracks: clinical, the new CONs to bring in the new people, reinventing yourself, adding specialties, what works, what doesn't work in the center situation, and then the third being business and regulatory.
Just for our audience, too, New York State is a certificate of need state. So when we're referring to CON, we're referring to the certificate of need in New York.
Yeah. And Tom was very gracious along the way to say, yes, come in, join us, let's work together. And with this process, a number of the vendors wanted to come and meet the centers if they thought there really was going to be a content at the conference that excited people to come. So we moved the conference to Albany, which was more accessible to everyone because, right, as people don't realize, a lot of people in New York City don't drive. Right. So therefore,
even getting on the train is a problem.
Was very easy. So from there, there was a lot of excitement coming through. And this conference is going to have twice as many centers as we've ever had at a conference. So it shows you the reinvigorating energy within the organization that we're from downstate want to participate and involved in. And then we're going to have a fall conference in New York and do an upstate downstate conference where we're all kind of working together at each one, and then hopefully further dive into different regions and have people work together independently in the regions. One of the things I found is that there's surgery centers near me that I can call and ask for help back and forth. And I just think we should really foster that from the state level. I think everybody has that same thing idea in mind. Right. It's just we just have to figure out how to do it. Where if I don't have a policy and you need one, here's my policy. Right. We should be colleagues with each other, and that's what we need to move towards.
Well, and that's just a good message for our audience, too, even in the remote areas and the rest of the country here. New York's a big state. But, you know, if you look, go into the regional areas, the upstate areas, you know, a lot of us are very rural, and often, you know, finding other people that do what we do is difficult. And so just get on the phone, call them up and see if you can have a small local meeting. That's the whole genesis of the state association here. That's what how we started.
Oh, that's great. There's actually, it's funny, within New York City, there's 5 centers here today that we're all within a 10-block radius, right, of each other. You know, we should be helping each other whenever we can.
That's,
you know,
right.
We don't compete against each other. We have our own doctors. We should be supporting each other, especially as regulations get more tedious as they go on. That's the only way we're going to really survive and thrive.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about who's here and what we're going to be, some of the content of this year's conference or this spring conference?
Yes. One of the exciting things that's going to happen tomorrow is the Committee to Reduce Infectious Deaths Chair, Betsy McCoy, is coming to the conference, and she has just developed a whole new standard of improving your ambulatory healthcare situation with ambulatory healthcare centers. She has a brochure, as it's statistically, we are safer on an infection rate than a hospital is, and she has the statistics to prove that. And in addition to the fact is she's implementing 10 steps that you can actually further improve your center, which she wants to introduce at this conference, and then she wants to take nationwide to further protect the consumer who's coming into the different centers. So we're very excited about that.
And we're hoping to have her interview with us at some point here. And we'll also make sure that we create a link to that information that she's going to be supplying to our audience.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And then we're expecting the Lieutenant Governor of New York is coming to speak with us at one point today or tomorrow. And then other aspects of what we went out for is who wants to hear different subjects coming up. We had, for instance, one particular center is interested in expanding another specialty into their single specialty center. Well, it turns out the person in the basement of my building who has an ASC, who's a GI center, did that. So I walked down to Helen Lowenorth and said, can you tell us how you did that?
Yeah.
People want to get the know-how. So it's a lot of the different speakers also are just people who've experienced what we need to do. You know, we've all been on the front line. And that's where we need to really show, this is my experience, these are my battle scars, but here's how you can do it easier.
Yeah. And by the way, in New York City right now today is the Public Health Council meeting, the committee meeting, to send approval to the Public Health Council for a number of certificate of needs in the ambulatory surgery industry, including one of ours, by the way, which is exactly what you're talking about, expanding from single specialty to multi-specialty. Very excited that that's going up there today. That's a big topic. A lot of the phone calls we've been getting lately have been centers that are trying to convert from single to multi-specialty. So that's a big area right now. I'm glad to hopefully have a great session on that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's funny, the CON expediters, the experts in the state, couldn't come today. They'll be here tomorrow because of the Public Health Council meeting today.
Down there. So,
I think both will be flying up after the meeting today.
Hopefully, so they'll make it on
tomorrow.
Time.
Yeah.
Great, Jeffrey. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
the sponsors of the ASC podcast with John Gailey is Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. John, can you tell us about some of the services that AHS offers?
Sure. So we are a regulatory oversight organization. We basically are involved in the business of helping organizations to always be prepared for surveys and to respond to surveys and just to become your outsourced regulatory compliance organization. We also do financial oversight too, but the stuff that's probably most pertinent to most of our listeners relates to regulatory compliance and accreditation compliance. So our goal is always to have our organizations remain prepared for surveys. And so we'll, to that end, we maintain the policy manuals. We develop educational programs. We can even do the educational programs for the organization. We oversee the quality improvement program. We write the minutes for the quality improvement program, if that's what the organization wishes. And we help run the governing body meetings, again, if that's what the organization wants, and we'll write the governing body minutes for that. We also do periodic mock surveys. We help the organization through a survey, and we'll help them respond to the plan of correction necessary after a deemed status survey. And most importantly, this is all at a fixed price that might surprise most of our listeners.
Hey, so how do our listeners learn more?
So for a free, no-obligation consultation, give me a call at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And you can also visit our website at www.ah-strategies.com and fill out the Contact Us form.
Okay, thanks, John.
So I have the entire Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies team, well, except for Jenna, here at the New York State Association meeting in Albany. And I just thought we would do a little bit of a debrief on some of the topics that were brought up that I think would be interesting for the national audience. And then one thing that would be pertinent for anybody who was considering New York State or, you know, starting a center in New York State. So there were a couple sessions that I think in particular have interest for everybody. Sue, you attended the section on electronic medical records. And let's just do an introduction to that. I think the speakers in that room were a little surprised when they asked everyone to raise their hands if they had an EMR, and far less than half of the audience had an electronic medical record. And it was funny because the people that had an electronic medical record seemed to be more surprised than the attorneys that we're putting on that session that we don't have EMR. It's almost like they jumped the gun, they jumped out, got the electronic medical record thing, and everybody else in the country was doing it, and indeed that wasn't the case. I will say, you know, among our clients at Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, I mean, there's literally a handful of them that have electronic medical records. Let's also point out right now that at this point, there are no CMS approved, there isn't even a process right now for CMS approval of an electronic medical record that's specific to the ambulatory surgery center industry. One of the other issues that people find with electronic medical records, in my experience, has been that many of them, they're trying to port over from other systems, such as porting a hospital system over to an ambulatory surgery system, or especially porting a system from a physician's office into the ambulatory surgery landscape. And those, neither of those really work very successfully. So, you know, the best systems out there are going to be those that are probably built from the ground up for ambulatory surgery. So, Sue, you attended the session on EMR. It was put on by an attorney that had some kind of pointers, just kind of for our audience, just some of those high points that they had when looking at the EMRs. And I'm going to add a little bit of color to it a little bit later, too, because some of the experience I've had in the medical legal field, you know, kind of would be pertinent. But go ahead.
Okay, well, there were two attorneys, Christopher DiGiacinto, and I apologize if I'm not saying that right, and Ruth Corcoran.
Both from the KBR law firm here in New York.
Yep. I guess there are, well, a couple of really main points. One is that when you print out the medical record, it looks nothing at all like what you're really seeing as you're documenting.
And by that way, that's an issue that I have as a surveyor, too. Because, you know, as a surveyor, we do the same thing that the attorneys do. I mean, the difference is that we do not have to look at the paper record. And I really encourage centers to not give the surveyors a printed paper record, because as you said, it looks nothing like the record that that the person was seeing when they're looking on the screen.
Mm-hmm. So one thing they had mentioned is, you know, as you're charting, and I don't know how many people are familiar with the medical records, but, you know, often with charting, you've got a drop-down menu where you may choose either the diagnosis or, you know, serosanguineous fluid was seen or whatever that might be.
Just to make it easier. It sounds like it's going to make it easier for everybody.
Yeah, but often the nurse will have one set of choices and a doctor might have another one.
Right.
So if you're in court because there's some disagreement, if the nurse has chosen one thing, the doctor something else, just because those were the choices and they were both very close maybe,
right.
You know, that gives rise to trying to set up some type of a conflict between the two, which is often what they said the other attorneys will do, is just try to look for anything where people maybe disagree, and it may not be that big of a difference, but it just was a difference in how the information was presented to them, and so that's what they chose.
Yeah.
So just kind of paying attention to that, using, if you've got a box where you can actually write something in, write something in specific. Always trying to make your charting specific to that patient. So that's where they talked about the copying and pasting.
That was a great section that they were talking about, the copying and pasting. I showed this example where there were two typos. And it carried on. Every person that came in after that clearly copied and pasted, because it was the same typographical errors and the additional notes after the initial.
And not changing, like they were trying to rule out a PE.
Right.
Okay, so they were trying to rule out a PE for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and because, and I've seen that when I've looked through medical records, sometimes it's at the bottom of a whole assessment. It's kind of like, okay, well, this is their beginning assessment. But then they forget to change, okay, this has been ruled out or it's been treated. And, you know, that just doesn't look good.
Yeah.
You know, charting near the point of care and...
No, what do you mean by that?
Just time-wise. If you're trying to say you gave this medication on time, or you were very quick to check on somebody if you got called for an emergency, but it's not charted until 5 hours later, you know, either putting at the bottom of the note, responded but not able to chart due to patient care. You don't have to be specific, but there just has to be something there.
And that's very pertinent to our industry, I think. The lawyers did work both for inpatient and outpatient. Mm-hmm. But for our industry, our cases are so fast, sometimes those doctors might not finish all of their notes until, you know, afterwards, though we encourage them to do so. So that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, and I think that's really common, because often you just don't have the time and you sit down at the end of your shift or at the end of the day and you do that.
Right.
But just as the name of the session was documenting as if you're testifying.
Right.
And that's kind of what you just have to keep in mind. How am I going to say 2 years from now that I did do the care and I specifically remember? So another thing they said, trying to, you know, maybe make it a habit. If you always chart right before lunch or, you know, and then a second time at the end of the day, if you can in court say, you know, this is my practice.
Right.
It's a lot easier to defend that, you know, than trying to say, oh, I remember that I charted at noon on this day 2 years ago. Just making a good habit for yourself so you can always kind of say, yep, this is what I do.
Got it. I think, so a big takeaway here still is, or a big point that we need to make, even though we have these sessions on EMR a lot, is do not jump into it. It's something that we have to be very careful with. It is not, I know EMR vendors that go out there and they do these white papers that say, you're going to send, you know, save so much money and you're going to have so much better documentation. By the way, at the end of the session, I wasn't there for the whole session, but at the end of the session, somebody from the audience asked the question, would you rather be in court with an electronic medical record or a paper medical record? And both the attorneys basically said immediately, paper.
Paper, for sure.
So, you know, that when you hear people marketing these systems saying that it's going to be better patient care, better legal documentation, save time, and money. That's not the case. I remember a center previous to me starting this company in was in Connecticut. They actually had to add 2 additional staff in order to implement their EMR record because of all the technical problems that they had with it, as well as ongoing education of the staff that were there. It was just the exact opposite of what they had been sold.
Yeah, well, in the hospital, it was such a major thing as we changed over.
Right.
And then it ended up being a good thing. But you do, again, and that's another point, is when things are too uniform, you just really have to be careful that you're being specific to the patient. You know, some doctors have, they talked about some templates that they'll use, and you just don't want to, you know, they don't want to pull in, oh, these five patients and they are all exactly the same.
Let's talk about that for a second. You have to say something
about that particular patient just to kind of prove, yeah, I was aware, I wasn't on autopilot or something like that.
So what they were referring to at that point is operative reports and the template. And somebody from the audience asked the question, what do you think of templates used for surgery? We do this a lot, you know, especially cataract surgery, pain procedures, where we'll use a standard template and just fill in the blanks. And both of the attorneys kind of cringed as though, you know, you just, this is not good. And they were talking about how it's important to add something that was specific to the case so that you could demonstrate in the court of law that that they truly were writing this for that particular patient.
Yes.
And if it's a template and there's no room, there's no space for anything other than to fill in the blanks, the left, right, you know, et cetera, then you are really going to put yourself at risk when you get into court.
Yeah, a tool is not a bad thing to shorten things up, but you have to be able to customize
that.
Like even Jenna, when we talked before, she had talked about cutting and pasting when she was working in the hospital, but she did it as a tool to see, okay, now I'm going to read all through this. What has changed? And she would change those things.
Right.
But if you're doing it just to save time, then it has to be a very conscious act and of course, Jenna, you know what you're doing.
Jenna is a nurse and very specific, and a physician has less time to be able to do that and probably will jump at that opportunity.
Yeah.
Sue, can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
No, well, John had mentioned that, you know, the EMR in a hospital setting is pretty common. But here in ambulatory, nobody's developed one that's specific for us. So the one
there are systems that are specific to us. But they're not. I don't think any of us have seen one yet that is not right on.
So these attorneys that were giving you examples, you had mentioned to me earlier that like a doctor will have a drop down that will have 100 different diagnoses. So a doctor's drop down, like you said, is different from a nurse or a different medical person. So he could have 110 different diagnoses to choose from. And because we know our doctors are busy and they're trying to get this done, they may not go all the way to the bottom.
Right.
So as EMRs get more sophisticated and we have more options that are just ambulatory, will that drop down get shorter? Will the templates that are written be more forgiving or more flexible? I'm not telling people to wait to jump into the pool. I understand that that's a decision they need to make for their own center. But is it possible that if you waited a little longer, we may find systems that may not be so cumbersome or it's not so easy to make a mistake that you'll wish you didn't make sitting on a stand, you know, sitting on a witness stand.
And whether you can customize, because the attorneys did mention, you know, maybe talk to your doctors and see which are the top 20 things that we use in our, you know, you don't have to, so I'm not sure.
You don't need the OBGYN procedures if you're a pain management center.
Yeah, or if there's, you know, because you don't want to have a choice not pick that was increment, you know, a tiny bit more appropriate than the one you chose, but you didn't see it because it was way down number 88 or something. So I don't know how customizable they are, but they kind of sounded like there may be a way to do that where you can choose, you know, and just have those and you pick it and, you know.
Well, you seem to also make it sound as if they'll take that tiny discrepancy, even if it really is just the difference of something small, to create a big deal about, oh, there's an inconsistency, there was a problem here, and then to turn that small, wow, I checked the wrong box, into, you know, you're not paying attention, you didn't care, you're on autopilot, you're not, you know.
Yeah,
and pitting the two providers against each other. Why did you say this? And doctor said that, not realizing you have a whole different screen you're looking at, depending on what type of provider you are.
Right. So, Alex, you attended a session on New York State that was kind of specific. So we're just at this little quick segment here for our New York State centers. And just a little bit of a flavored here. You know, we do a lot of work in New York State. It's not our exclusive state, but because we actually have an office in the state we're very familiar with. And I've personally built two centers myself and ran them over the years in New York State. So for everybody out there, one of the challenges in New York State is that we have some specific rules that require ongoing reporting that are much more complicated than in many other areas. For example, we have to report every one of our discharges to what's called the SPARC system. So every patient that is discharged from our center, we have to send information about probably 150 elements or more to the state on a monthly basis. And that information goes into a public database. Now, all of this information is blinded, so there's no information about the patients. So, you know, if you're starting up a center in New York State, you got to basically buy a system, a billing system that accommodates the ability to get that information. Along with that, we have our famous HICRA tax, which is a tax on our gross revenues, basically. It's not quite that simple, which we have to pay on a monthly basis. And that's extremely complicated because some of that tax is paid for by the insurance companies directly and paid for, and part of it is by us. So you got to get good information out of the system to be able to do that. Third, one of our big things in New York State, which is your real bailiwick, is what?
Cost reports.
That's right. Alex spends a good portion of his life doing cost reports, and Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is the largest provider of cost report services in the state of New York for ambulatory surgery centers, and Alex is basically that. How many people are we going to have to hire this year in order to cover that cost reporting period?
Yeah, at least two.
Yeah, and that'll be a full-time job really for them for probably a couple months. So, that's going to be a challenge. And then probably the biggest thing is this whole limited life issue. And that is that if you get a new license in New York State to build a surgery center, unlike any other part of the country right now that I'm aware of, is you get a five-year limited life. In other words, within 5 years, they can yank your license from you if you don't prove that you did everything that you said you were going to do in the CON. And you attended a session that talked a little bit about that. And one of the major things is what?
Charity care. Charity care is a very significant issue when it comes to doing those cost reports. And as part of the limited life, you also have to submit those annual reports, as you know.
Right. We do those annual reports. You have to have an independent company come in and issue those reports. So.
And they all have to agree. Your annual report has to agree with your cost report, which...
It's challenging because one is issued in April, the other is issued in... Well, August, September, could be even later.
Whenever they decide to release the software.
That's right. Well, and it might sound like those, what's the big deal? Well, the issue is, you know, how long does it take to get super accurate records? So, you know, when I write the report, the limited life report in March, you might only have preliminary information, and it hasn't been audited yet because the auditors haven't looked at it. By the time the auditors are done, by August... It's different information, so we have to go back and reissue that limited life report. A lot of work involved in this.
Yep, and you have to make sure that you're doing what you said in your CON as far as charity care goes. Now, one thing that they were talking about in the presentation was that the charity care that they were required to do, these endoscopy centers, was about 4%.
Which is almost impossible for anybody but an endoscopy center to meet in the state.
Exactly. Yeah, and a lot of our centers are far below that.
Right.
Because they just simply can't get that level of care, and they can't get the support from the FQHCs.
Yeah, Federal Qualified Health Plans. I don't know how much our listeners know about New York, but there are very few uninsured people in this state. We have, you know, very good Medicaid plans. We have other options within the state. So, and we as centers encourage our patients, if they come to us without insurance, to sign up for that insurance. And I think they probably talked about that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's a big problem.
Right. I mean, so the challenge we've had is, do you want us not to sign them up for Medicaid so that we can claim them as charity care?
Right, right. Obviously, I think the best thing for the patients would be for them to become insured and for us to help them with that.
Right.
And so the state doesn't necessarily encourage us to do that, which is kind of silly.
Seems kind of productive.
Yeah.
So we also had an interesting discussion. Gina Thornberry from the ASC Association talked briefly about OASCAHPS, better known as OAS CAPS, which is the a system that we assume at some point Medicare is going to insist that we use in order to poll our patients to find out satisfaction results. And Sue, you were at the session where they talked about OAS CAPS. What was it was a very brief update, I know, but what did she say about OAS CAPS? And, you know, of course, we're sitting here in May of 2018. We get the preliminary information in July. What was her thought?
I guess everything's kind of on hold right now. She wasn't really sure. You know, she has no definite news, but she was just saying start looking into. You're going to have an independent person, company doing the survey for you.
Right.
So she said, you know, at least maybe just start thinking about looking into what people are charging, who's, you know, just try to have some kind of a plan in place. Not really going out and hiring anybody yet because we don't know the timing of it, but she believes it's definitely coming and it's going to be people are going to be scrambling. It's
to do it. And of course, all of us, all 5,600 surgery centers in the country are going to be rushing to do it.
Everybody's going to all of a sudden have to do it. And it's, what is it, 30, 37
questions? I think it's almost 40 questions.
Yeah, it's kind of...
We've talked about this in the podcast before. I'll have to dig up which episode it was, because I think we actually posted the questions that they're asking.
Yeah, the fact that there's so many, even if they're easy questions, it's who, you know, people are going to... It's going to be hard to get a lot of people to answer those questions. And and she did kind of mention there'll be a lag time, so it could be weeks after they've been to your center. Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be a challenge.
And I think we also worry that in our industry, where we're so closely connected with many of the physicians' practices, if there is a big lag time, they might get mixed up between who is providing the service in the office compared to who is providing the service in the surgery center.
Somebody actually brought up a question like that. Like, what, you know, are they going to be very specific about what they're asking about? But, you know, even when you are, I think people don't always understand the question. So,
well, and as a patient, I've been a patient in a surgery center before. I know I probably wouldn't complete 35 questions over the phone or through.
Unless you were dissatisfied.
That's
exactly the case. If they
you'll answer
to
every
say,
question. Yeah.
Even then, I would probably only stay on the phone till question number 10.
Good point. Yeah.
And there is no electronic version, right?
It's either you're going to do this snail mail. Yep. Or a phone call. Yeah, and they may
I think I'd stay on the phone because I wouldn't want to be rude to the other. I mean,
after a certain
point.
On
the phone? Or a machine?
No, it's a person.
I think it's got to be a person, but...
Yeah.
This is going to be an interesting dilemma for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And mail,
No.
If I even opened it, probably not.
It would probably to us all look like junk mail.
Especially unless, like you said, you know, if I was really unhappy, I'd say, boy, I'm going to tell them. But I don't know how accurate the results are going to be.
And a lot of the centers that we deal with have repeat customers.
Yeah.
You know, they'll come in once a month for a pain treatment. Are they going to send one every...
No. This is
This
is you don't do it 100%. Like most of our centers... Well, and it's pretty much the standard that you send a satisfaction survey with every patient going out. This is I think it is a random sampling of the patients or a certain number of them that are done.
And
well,
hopefully
because it's so
some
expensive.
Sort of a safeguard to so it isn't accidentally always the same person.
Right. I don't know how they select that, but I guess that's what we're going to start learning very soon. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for your discussion.
So, John, we're recording this last section from beautiful Lake Tahoe on Sunday morning. Jenna's husband officially graduated from University of Nevada, Reno, with his doctorate, and we flew out here after the New York conference to see his graduation, and then tacked on a week in the mountains here to relax a little bit and get some work done in a place with a really, really nice view.
I know. This is a far cry from our being on the road all the time in other places, so I think we're going to have a lot of fun. We do have quite a bit of work to do this week. Jenna is actually not part of the podcast. She is actually sitting next to us as we're recording
this. Yes, she is.
We'll let her, we'll leave her off for the week here. But it was a very wonderful ceremony yesterday.
That is a great part of our work. Not all of it has to be done on site, so we can be someplace really beautiful and enjoy
it. That's right.
So, John, we have a few exciting changes coming up. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about them?
Sure. Our podcasts, as everybody has probably noticed, are starting to get a little bit longer than the 30 minutes. And what we've decided to do is do a few special hour-long podcasts, which means that we can actually give you AEU credits. In order to give AEU, it has to be a minimum of an hour. And we also have to have a concentrated content, which we've actually been doing in many of our podcasts here. So stay tuned and watch our website at www.ascpodcast.com for information on when we will have them and what you need to do in order to get the credit. There will be a nominal charge for the credit, but the podcast will be free. And then the next thing is our first premium two-hour podcast on governance is nearing completion. Actually, Sue and I are going to finish recording that podcast while we're here. The premium podcast will be a deep dive into governance and provide our listeners with an overview of the regulatory and accreditation requirements in this area and provide great suggestions on how to run board meetings and how to document them appropriately. We're going to apply for two AEU credits for this from the organization that grants the AEU credit for people that are CAST credentialed. So watch our website for this exciting new podcast option. As always, though, our weekly podcast will be free. Sue, let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry. Every week, we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com. That's info@ascpodcast.com. Note that we also have a calendar of events on our website at www.ascpodcast.com.
So the New Jersey Association of ASCs 8th Annual Ambulatory Surgery Conference is June 12th through June 13th at the Wilshire Grand Hotel.
And I believe we're actually going to be recording from there also.
We will be there.
Becker's 16th Annual Future of Spine, the Spine Orthopedic and Pain Management Driven ASC Conference is June 14th through the 16th, 2018 at the Swiss Hotel in Chicago, Illinois.
And registration for the online CAPE exam that will be administered during the month of October at various testing sites throughout the United States is August 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.aboutcape.org.
And you spell CAPE, C-A-I-P. So that's A-B-O-U-T-C-A-I-P.org. The California Ambulatory Surgery Association has the CASA Annual Conference, September 5th through 7th, 2018 in Huntington Beach.
Ohio State Association meeting will be September 18th through the 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio, and I believe we will also be there.
We're going to be there. Whether we're going to have a podcast or not, we're not quite sure, but the AHS will be there, and I'll be speaking at that conference also. The 5th Annual New York Metro ASC Symposium, November 2nd, 2018 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square, and again, I'll be speaking at that conference, and we're still working with them to see if we can get a room to do some live recording from there.
CASA Infection Prevention Seminars, November 7th and 8th, 2018 in Costa Mesa.
Registration for the online CASC exam that will be administered during the month of August at various testing locations throughout the United States is coming to an end. It's during the month of May, but you have to get your application in by the 31st of May. To register, go to www.aboutcasc.org. That's www.aboutcasc.org. And another testing period is in October 2018, and the registration for that exam will be between August 1st and August 31st.
Remember, if you would like your event listed on our website and discussed on air, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com.
So that ends our podcast for the week. Sue and I are going to go out and take in the beautiful mountain views here. Well, I guess we have to edit this podcast first. But after we do that, we're going to take in the view. And maybe we'll post a picture of beautiful Lake Tahoe on the website so they can see what a great view we have here. So we'll see you next week.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.